that are allowed in the residential zones. And that's where the focus of the inquiry is what are the criteria that you are obligated to weigh and the hearings officer did weigh for purposes of understanding what uses can take place in a residentially zoned property. And before I talk about that, you should know, and I think you probably saw it when it was shown to you, is that that all of the Reed buildings and present campus are located in the R zone. So the entire campus is presently in the R zone, residential zone. It's on residential land. And that's the way our city code works, is we put these institutions, whether they be a hospital or a college or a school, in residential zones, and they follow then the criteria for a conditional use master plan. So this use, the entire master plan, is obligated to meet the criteria for a conditional use master plan. We're obligated to do a master plan under the code because of the size. Now, every one of these master plans is going to have different dynamics. In this case, it's not an institutional use such as a parking structure that's going to be placed here. It's the use of an existing residential structure that currently exists as a residential structure that will be used for college purposes. That's the use. Now, there are two basic criteria, and I don't want to get too lawyerly here on these criteria, but I think they're important, and I think the hearings officer did a lot to understand what those criteria require. The first is the question of, is the overall residential appearance and function significantly lessened by the proposed use? And in viewing that, the hearings officer had the obligation to try to figure out, so what is the scope of the residential neighborhood that I look at for purposes of that criterion? And that criterion is called proportion of uses. And it goes to the question of, are these uses overweighing the neighborhood? And the hearings officer said the appropriate inquiry for that is to look at the neighborhood as a whole, not to look at Moreland Lane, not to look at any immediate property next to the campus, but to look at the neighborhood as a whole. And the hearings officer found, and it's quoted on page 31 of the hearings officer's decision, that no, this particular Parker House doesn't do anything of the nature of outweighing the proportion of uses. And it maintains the residential appearance and function of the neighborhood. And I think you can easily contrast that with perhaps a hospital that might want to put a parking structure or an office building in a residentially zoned land. This is far different than that. The scale, the intensity are all different. The second criterion is whether there are significant impacts to the livability of nearby residential zoned land. And in fact, in that instance, the hearings officer said, yeah, it is relevant in that circumstance to look at those nearby residentially zoned lands. Those include, in this instance, Moreland Lane, but they also include, by the way, the remainder of the college campus located to the north. That's all residentially zoned land. And your code says that you look at basically five or six categories. You look at noise, glare from lights, late night operations, odors, litter, privacy and safety, and restricts that inquiry to those particular elements. And the hearings officer found, and he spent, it looks to me like something like 10 pages of his opinion walking through each one of those particular items and saying, I think that I conclude that no, the college has done enough to reduce the amount of noise. There's not going to be the late night operations. They've done what they need to do to prevent the glare from lights. They've done what they need to do on the odors and litter. And that then resulted in what have been called the 17 conditions that have been that are before you. And I think it's important to go through those 17 conditions because, frankly, the hearings officer didn't just dream those up. Those are Reed College's suggestions about how best to manage the Parker House after having tried over and over for the space of 2 years to come to an accommodation with the neighborhood. These conditions, yes, they are strict. These conditions are very detailed, and they're very detailed because that's what the hearings officer wanted to see. And just categories here, overnight guests are allowed at Parker House, not more than four per night. There's limitations on numbers of guests at the houses, and I think it's interesting, by the way, just to think about this for a moment. 450 people in 1 month, what my house that has, my daughter no longer lives there, two people. If my wife and I go out once and return once in a day, and she does it, I do it. Over the space of 30 days, we're up to 120 trips. So you can easily see how 450 is a small limiter, if you will, on this particular house. It's a tight limiter, I guess is a better phrase. Hours of operation, the neighborhood says, well, those parties will go on from 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. Well, one, they're not parties. They're college meetings. And no, they don't take place for 14 hours straight. That's not realistic at all. Notices are required to be given to the neighborhood of Parker House events. That's to individual, that's through website, that's through all forms of communication. There's parking and traffic management for the events, and I'm going to speak more particularly about that in a moment, but the invitations have to appropriately disclose where people are supposed to go, not using the Parker House as an address that they go to. There'll be temporary signs required. There'll be permits. This is an important fact, I think, overall. The college is required to seek a permit from the city to put No Read College parking signs at on Moreland Lane. In fact, if the city council wants to say that that's what the city should do, we'd accept that. I assume that the neighbors would accept that right now without going through a permit process. A Reed College staff member will be placed physically outside to help cars get the right location and not get confused and not end up parking on Moreland Lane. That's all the parking requirements. There's delivery and service vehicle requirements and then a long, long list of other requirements. And I think most importantly in that list are record-keeping requirements, Condition 13, as well as monitoring, enforcement, and grievance provisions. Reed's obligated to keep records on the use of a house, submit those records to the city and to the East Moreland Neighborhood Association Board so they can see those. And then finally, there's a grievance procedure so that there's an ongoing communication that is institutionalized between the neighborhood and Reed, and I know Reed wants that. That's the kind of communication that Reed has always wanted with the neighborhood with respect to these issues. So we don't have rough edges. Those are conditions of approval. As to transportation, Kittleson engineers found that there's adequate transportation, that the parking is adequate on campus to serve this proposed use. It doesn't add very many vehicles at all. Most people, as you can tell, would go from campus, walk to that particular building. The impacts are pretty minor. PDOT, your own representatives, have said the transportation system is adequate. But even with that, we've decided that we would voluntarily agree through this condition of approval to put in a loading bay, if you will, on Woodstock, so it makes it even more convenient for the people who might want to be dropped off there and they won't want to be going to the Moreland Lane side. So there are these very particular and precise requirements on traffic management. So through this process, and bear in mind that in 2005 or 6, whenever that was, the hearings officer denied the Parker House after approving the remainder of the master plan. And the hearings officer at that time said, you know, go back and really fine-tune this and make sure there's a closer constraint on what's allowed. That's exactly what Reed College has done. It's gone back then through the hearings office after having dealt with this student count issue, which it didn't expect would be the subject of a complaint from the neighborhood. And it got approval from the hearings officer. And the 17 conditions that are there with respect to the Parker House are the ones that the Reed College, as a part of its application process, submitted to the hearings officer to say, we can agree to these conditions. We think these conditions assure compliance with the criteria under your code for purposes of institutional uses in the residentially zoned lands. And I guess this is one of those instances where you've got an 83-page hearings officer decision, and I think that hearings officer heard lots of testimony. And as I look at the hearings officer work, it was very thorough. It was very sensitive to the issues that were raised. And it made an appropriate conclusion, I think a conclusion that you as a city council can be proud of, your city hearings officer understanding this and looking at the criteria, not getting hung up in what I think are some allegations that are just simply not relevant to the application, and granting approval to Reed College. And with that, my time's running out. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Either of us would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I have a question, and it has to do with something that you determined that wasn't relevant. I'd like to find out the Reed College response to the Eastmoreland neighborhood folks who have said that the original application or intention to buy the house was to be the resident of the president. Is that true?
No, I don't believe that to be true. I don't.
Is there a... Okay. So you're saying that Reed College did not make any such written statement or oral statement?
The house came on the market and became available to Reed. It's a house that is an asset that's important to the community. Reed decided to buy it as a part of the Reed campus.
So there was no intention expressed or otherwise that it would be used as the president's house?
I don't know of any intention that way.
Can you find that out?
That certainly I could find that out, but I don't believe
that's the vice president knows.
I can tell you it was part of all the internal discussions. There was never a thought that the president would live in the house. I think the confusion may have arisen from the phrase president's house. Functions like in a president's house.
So the intention for Reed was that the president would reside in the Prexy house?
No, the president would reside in his own house. He made it clear that he wanted to buy and maintain his own residence rather than live in a college-owned facility.
I had one more question. This is for you, Mr. Abel. You referred to the student population. The best way to determine the student population is headcount.
Yes, sir.
What is different than that? Why would not you use the number of students who are enrolled?
Yeah, well, enrolled is one calculation. Let me just go through a couple of the calculations. You got full paying equivalent. Now, some of those aren't, you can have students there who might not be paying full, so that number doesn't work very well. Enrollment can be used if enrollment means students that are enrolled in their various capacities. Now, you should note that students are there not only as college students, there are some high school students that have attend the school for one class, for example, on Portland Public Schools cooperation programs. So that becomes more difficult. Headcount, we thought, was more the most inclusive number that would then be a calculable number that we could then understand the traffic demand and the parking demand from.
So on the subject of the headcount, did I understand you to say that the reason that became an issue was that a complaint was filed with the Bureau of Development Services?
That's correct. And their complaint came in, and city code enforcement contacted Reed College and indicated that the Reed College's website, using a number of students, had a number that was in excess of the master plan that was adopted in 2006 by, I want to say, a handful. I know it's less than 10. And when we went back to the master plan, we saw there was confusion about how this was calculated, and we decided rather than to kick 10 students off campus, we would submit as a part of our master plan update a better number, a number that is calculable and makes sense. And we supported that number then with, you know, our transportation studies to understand what the impact would be.
Mr. Abel, I have a few questions if I could. You mentioned a grievance procedure that you had set up. And so could you explain in greater detail how neighbors can be assured that the conditions of approval would be faithfully implemented?
Yeah, let me start that with the fact that Reed College is a long-time institution, and I think valued institution in this city, and it does not have a history of complaints from the neighborhood. The master plan that exists has a series of conditions of approval dating from 1990 with respect to operations on the campus, and we don't have a history of complaints about violations of conditions of approval. As to Parker House, the grievance committee, and I don't know if you have it in front of you, I don't want to just read it to you. If you've got it in front of you, I'll just paraphrase it, and it's condition 14. What that committee does is it establishes, with representatives of the college and the neighborhood association, a committee that is a joint standing committee to address concerns or issues arising from the use of the Parker House. They'll each appoint three members to the committee. The committee has two co-chairs, so it's an equally balanced committee. And the committee will meet periodically to discuss specific issues that arise over the use of the Parker House. So a very typical sort of committee structure that allows the neighborhood to participate in identifying concerns that have raised. Now, as to the questions of what happens in the circumstance of a city, or this particular circumstance where Parker House, there's just violation, let's just say there's a violation, what are the city's enforcement powers? Well, the city's enforcement powers are quite strict, if you will. The city has powers through Title 33, Title 3.30, as well as Title 22 for enforcement of conditions of approval. And among the remedies that the city has when there's a violation of conditions of approval are penalties, abatement requirements, and the like. Now, I can assure you that there's no effort on the part of an institution like Reed College to ever be in that situation. Your city, though, has an enforcement branch in the Bureau of Development Services. Many cities don't. And frankly, that's a good thing that we have that here. It allows for enforcement of conditions of approval. And so your city code is very, very strict on that. But I don't really even want to rely there. I want to rely on the fact that these conditions of approval create at least an effort to provide structured cooperation between Reed and the neighborhood. I think they're very good.
Mr. Abel, my second question is, are there or were there other conditions that were requested by the neighborhood but that are not included in the hearing officer's decision? And I would mean material substantive conditions.
Yeah, you may have to ask the neighborhood about that. I don't recall the neighborhood having supplied any particular conditions of approval to the hearings officer, and I could be wrong on that. The posture of the hearing was what I would think of with a little bit of kind of all or nothing, and that it wasn't in that hearing a particular circumstance in which it was something that I think the neighborhood wanted to do.
And my third question, sir, is I'm looking at the summary.
Sorry, Commissioner Fitch. The one thing that we have discussed with the neighborhood would be the possibility of having a caretaker live in the house. We'd be willing to do that if that would be useful. That was not, didn't seem to address their concerns, however, so didn't become part of the final version.
I had a question. Are you done? I'm sorry.
If I can come back to my question, sir.
I just wanted to find out on the hearing officer's report, trying to see what page number. Looks like it's page 41. It said that during a Parker House event, it would be nearly impossible for an emergency vehicle to get through. However, it should be noted that Mr. Bob Haley from Portland Transportation stated during the July 14th public hearing that Southeast Moreland Lane is not considered a safety problem. Someone asked a while ago if any of us had walked Moreland Lane, and I have, but I've also been in a police car. And I can tell you it's a very narrow street, and it's probably just wide enough if a fire truck had to get up in there that it could get there. I think any cars parked in that area would present a fire safety issue in my mind. And tell me a little bit more how you intend to control the parking in that.
Well, I did find that language, and I think Mr. Haley's here if he wants to speak further on that. One of the conditions of approval actually goes further than the existing condition, and that is that it asks Reed College, or I guess requires Reed College, to come to the city and seek a permit for signage on Moreland Lane that would say no Reed College parking. We support that. That actually would better the existing condition at Moreland Lane. And as I say, if this city council wants to just make that a requirement that those signs go up without the permit process, we'd be happy with that. But I think, in fact, we better that condition, the existing condition.
Mr. Abel, in the summary of position that we've received from the East Moreland Neighborhood Association, which is part of the record that we as council members have, there's the following statement. There's the Neighborhood Association urges us to grant a standalone conditional use permit and not to include Parker House in the boundaries of the revised master plan. Would you care to respond to that suggestion?
Yeah. Reed College is obligated under the city code, or the city code obligates Reed College to include all of its properties in its master plan as a part of the conditional use. And the reason for that under the code is that one wouldn't want to be having to manage a large institutional use with a series of independent conditional uses. We frankly wouldn't like it, and the city wouldn't like it either, because you have independent kind of decisions, if you will, in different land use decisions. You know, it's the master plan conditional use requirement is there for a reason. It's to say we got to look at all the impacts together when we take a look at one of these institutions in the neighborhood. And so I don't think the city account, the code allows for that to be standalone. I frankly don't understand the purpose for that, but the purpose is for Reed is that the application that we've submitted is one that, you know, puts it in the master plan. It's governed by the master plan. You know, if it's a conditional use, I'll tell you, the other part is if it's a standalone conditional use, none of the rest of the master plan provisions would even apply to it.
Thank you.
Question.
Other questions?
I was curious about the mobility access issue. I mean, how are people with mobility impairments to get there? Are they supposed to be dropped off on Woodstock and then climb the stairs?
It's a little inconvenient. The house will be ADA. What they'll need to be do is drop off on Woodstock and, you know, move down the sidewalk to get to an entrance that'll work.
Is that the stairway? Is there another?
We will be ADA compliant, and if it requires at that particular location some form of a lift on the stairwell, we can put that in.
Isn't that what I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, Moreland Lane is concerned about this, so it's a legitimate issue. If somebody's, let's say somebody's dropping somebody off with a mobility impairment, are they expected to get off at Woodstock and then climb that stairs?
I don't know if the right word is climb the stairs, because I don't think they have the ability to climb the stairs, but we will make accommodation to make sure that their access on that side of the house is ADA compatible, and whether that's through a lift or some other mechanism, I can't tell you at this point.
And what if somebody decides they're going to drop this person off at Moreland Lane?
Well, at least the transportation strategies that we've undertaken at this point, you know, again, have signage that people don't go on Moreland Lane, have on-site monitor to keep them off Moreland Lane. We're doing everything we can to keep that from occurring.
So Reed would have an on-site monitor in the form of a person stationed at Moreland Lane that would direct people to the west parking lot or to the Woodstock and would not allow them to come in and do their thing.
That's correct. That's required under condition 5.
That this person be specifically posted with that authority in mind, and that's the message to somebody that pulls up, wants to drop their grandmother off.
When an event, this is how it's worded, when an event includes off-campus invitees, a Reed staff member shall be placed at the entrance of the Parker House to confirm with people as they enter the event where they parked. If guests are parked on Moreland Lane or Southeast Woodstock Boulevard, the staff members must ensure the vehicle is moved to the appropriate parking areas.
That's not quite the same as a person stationed at Moreland Lane. That sounds like a person stationed somewhere else saying, I hope you didn't park on Moreland Lane.
Yeah.
If you did, please move your car.
Well, okay. And I think that's a pretty
Moreland Lane is kind of, you know, one of those streets I could imagine a person very easily doing that function of saying, please don't enter here. And would probably also be able to tell who's a resident and who's not. But that's not quite what's in the condition.
It's actually hard to tell who's a resident and not, I think, when it comes to those. But I think we have to look at each one of the requirements for the transportation to understand how this will be managed. So let me just kind of walk through those. You know, the invitations that go out to whoever it may be for the event will address, will have the address of the Reed College, not the Parker House address. Instructions directing people to the west of, or Prexy will be included within those invitations. And we will include complete instructions. We'll then have temporary signage at the event.
You say directions to Prexy, meaning what?
It's the Prexy lot, either the west or the Prexy lot, parking lot. So the instructions show which lot to park in. And there will be temporary signage. There'll be the monitor at the house, and there'll be a, service vehicles. We didn't talk about that, but service vehicles can use the driveway, but only two at any individual time. And I think I hear a transportation engineer who wants to respond to some of that too, Mr. Salzman, so let me do that.
I'm Judith Gray, G-R-A-Y, with Kittleson & Associates, 610 Southwest Alder. And on the question you raised, we actually did earlier talk about having somebody posted at the intersection at Moreland Lane to direct people away, but then realized that that might be a problem if you're making people stop and maneuver at that intersection, and decided it was better to take every effort, of course, first of all, to direct people to park in the appropriate location, but as a final safety, to have a staff person at the house to check and make sure that people parked where they're supposed to, and if not, they can either send the person back to park their car or else that staff person will do it. The purpose there is to make sure that cars are getting off of Moreland Lane. So,
what is the authority of that person if the person chooses not to move their vehicle? What does the authority of that person have to?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a matter of authority. These are guests coming to, you know, these are guests coming to a small event, you know, in a private facility. It's,
if the,
and I suppose that they're there by invitation.
If the street is marked with city signs that say no Reed College parking, that would be a violation of the city code and would be enforceable by the city.
The city would have to post that in order for it to be enforceable.
The city would have to post the signage, yes, that's correct.
Not Reed College.
That's correct. The condition of approval that we've been, that we're burdened by is to ask you for permission to put those signs up, and we certainly are going to be doing that.
I guess, you know, just to belabor this, I guess, seems to me, from what I recall about that intersection, if you had somebody positioned at the right place such that they wouldn't make the turn into Moreland Lane in the first place, you're not talking about a traffic problem necessarily. You're either directing them further east onto Woodstock. Well, I guess that's where you would be.
You know, and I think the college is open to doing it either way. We discussed those options, and this is where we landed on determination that this was the most effective and efficient and safe way to do it. And that was the only thing we were trying to achieve.
Okay. Was the neighborhood, and they can speak for themselves in a minute, but is this something they were not willing to engage in, or was this something they that was actually put on the table, and they agreed the backup movements might be
problematic? I don't think they agreed one way or the other. One concern they expressed was that we'd be stopping neighbor cars and asking, you know, who are you, and it becomes a feel of a gated community.
So that was kind of more of the their angle on that.
The transportation engineer hired by the neighborhood had thought that it was not appropriate to put someone out on that corner. And so we ended up with a resolution that I think, with all of the requirements, satisfies what I think goes far beyond what any other particular user in any particular structure has been burdened by, if you will, within the city.
Okay, my last question, I just want to test your extensive knowledge of these things. Is it, how atypical is it for a conditional use permit to have 17 or 40 conditions? I suppose there's probably a big difference between 17 and 40, but
it's, I mean, it depends on the count, I guess. I have done conditional use permits where there might be in excess of 100 conditions. I've seen them as low as no conditions, of course. And it's sometimes those conditions are well-crafted and understandable. And those are the ones that it doesn't really matter what the count is, if you will. Here we have well-crafted, understandable, and enforceable conditions. I think you'd find that if you were to ask the folks in Bureau of Development Services about the enforceability of these conditions, they'd say, yeah, those are, you know, they're clear and objective, and that's what you're trying to get to.
Further questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Now we'll go to persons who oppose the appeal. How many folks are signed up for that?
Okay. We have four.
Four? Mm-hmm. Please call the first three.
First three are Thomas Hansen, Robert Haig, I believe, and James Kahan.
Thank you for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes. Anybody can begin.
Okay. I'm Robert Haig, and I own the house directly across from Parker House. It's 2830 Southeast Moreland Lane. And I bought the house 5 years ago, and I think there's probably four or five other people who bought houses along that street within the last, after Parker House was developed, and we all knew it was the president's house. And so I knew it was going to be having certain events there, and Robert Smith, who had the house prior, knew about the house and as the being the president's house, and that there will be university or college events there. I've attended four universities over my life and have a BS and three masters, and so I know what a president's house is. I know what events that go on there, and whether they're party or fundraisers or whatever. And so I knew it was going to be a house having events after I purchased the property. But the thing I have a concern about is a lot of people who bought houses after the fact. It's like a developer buying land next to an airport and having all those houses there, people moving in, and then 3 years later complaining that the airport's making noise and they want the airport to be reduced. Well, we purchased our houses there knowing that was going to be a president's house and that there was going to be events there. Whether it's a residence or whatever, or a commercial kitchen, it's going to be major events there. And so I have a problem trying to change the rules of the game after the fact. Yes, Moreland Lane is very narrow, and I think the university has done a good job in saying they won't have any traffic on that road and how they want to have no parking along there. And the university has done a lot for the community over the years there, and it helps the Woodstock and the businesses over there, and by having the students there, it helps the community overall. So I think it's a good university, and I think the community gets more advantages from it than not having it there at all. My only recommendations is that to let Reed College implement this plan in phases, review this in 12 months, see what's happening, and make revisions at that time. What was the other thing? And then sending out notices and letting us know what events are going to go on. So if we want to partake, that'd be great. And also, more important is that they have lights on in the house in front, which is like residential type lighting, and they're not on. And I think for security and safety, I would like to recommend that they stay on or be on at least before, you know, all the way to midnight for safety along the lane there for people walking or driving along that area. Thank you.
I just had a question for you. You've apparently been to a few president's houses.
Yes.
Tell us what you think it means.
Well, I think it's the president lives there and he has major functions, and also he lets the house out to other functions within the university. And when I was at Penn State, we would have, you know, the graduate school would have classes there or different events there, and he would let us use that, you know, the major part of the house for our events. And there was a separate living quarters in the house for the family, and they didn't mind that at all. So it was a multifunctional type facility.
My name is James Kahn. I live at 2835 Southeast Lambert Street, so I live in East Moreland, but I wear two hats. I am an alumnus of Reed College, class of 1964. My wife, Kathy Emery, is an alumnus of Reed College, class of 1967. And the reason that we bought our home in East Moreland is to be close to the college. From our perspective, the college and the community are intertwined. They're really inseparable. And if you look at the historical record, this is true from when East Moreland was started and when Mr. Ladd owned his farms out there. And our impression and the impression of our neighbors, the people we talk to when we're walking our dog, is that this is true. Then we get material from the Neighborhood Association, and I look at it and I scratch my head. My wife looks at it, she scratches her head, and our neighbors look at it and they scratch our head. And that's not what we recognize. Now, Mr. Sperling is a nationally recognized expert in livability. feel forgive a little immodesty. I'm an internationally recognized expert in negotiation and consensus formation and coalition formation. And when the college says that they had 80 meetings with these people and nothing came of it, I can believe it when we hear as part of the testimony that this is the way to go further. The college falsified information. When people attribute bad intent to the college. Now, I've talked to the college. They have actually consulted me and how can we make this thing more livable, and I'd like to think I've helped them. I can assure you that the intent of the college is to have this community that works. And if it hadn't been, you'd better believe that I'd be telling them that they're doing the wrong thing, because one of the reasons I want to live there is to have this comfortable community. I think that's about all that I've previously written to you, and I've previously given testimony at the original hearing. And I have to say that we have many, many different views of the elephant here, and I'd like you to just look at the record to find out which elephant you're going to believe in.
Hi, I'm Tom Hansen. I'm an Eastmoreland resident for about 20 years, and I spoke at the July hearing because I understood that one of the criteria for conditional use by Reed was that the uniqueness of the property and the situation. So I'd like to speak to the uniqueness of the Parker House. First of all, the Multnomah County de facto has labeled it a unique residence. It has a Class 7 plus rating. There's one other magnificent home in Eastmoreland that has a 7. Every other home in Eastmoreland is a 5, 5.5, with a few 6s and 6 pluses. I'm not sure there's another 7 plus residence in Southeast Portland. So it is unique by that. It's unique because it was built for a large family with multiple servants. It has 30 rooms. It has multiple rooms in a servants' quarters. The previous owners were overwhelmed by the house. They were overwhelmed in terms of the cost, the upkeep, the maintenance, and that's well known in the record. The real estate market spoke about its uniqueness. It was put on the market in 2002 for 2 years during the height of frenzy in buying houses in Eastmoreland. And the price was lowered over $1 million. There were no offers that I know of. Reed College did not push anybody else out of the way and outbid anybody for this property. I think this house didn't sell or doesn't work as a residence, didn't sell as a residence, because it's what I call a trophy home. And trophy homes are usually in Dunthorpe and other places, and it isn't an Eastmoreland home in terms of size and structure and quality and all that kind of stuff. And I think another reason that it didn't sell was because it doesn't have enough parking. If I were to buy that house, could afford it, I would want to entertain and use the house to show off as a nice house. And I would have to send out invitations to say, please park illegally in the Reed College lots across the street because they don't tow. But anyway, there is not enough parking. Right. Anyway, and one of the ironies from the discussion today, to me, having walked Moreland Lane many, many times, is that that property can easily be isolated from Moreland Lane. And why do I say that? Because the property due east, another large property, nice property, has actually done that. You can walk up and down Moreland Lane and not either see into that house or into that yard. And Reed College can do the same thing, can copy that, or they can hire the same landscaper and do the same thing to that property and isolate it from Moreland Lane.
Your time is up, sir.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Last person who signed up is Moshe Lushki.
So that's who Moshe Lushki is.
I want to read my statement. Moshe Lenski, 4314 Southeast Crystal Springs Boulevard, Portland. 97206. I want to get through my statement. I hope somebody will ask me a question about the number of students at the college afterwards, okay? I'm basing my comments on three different pertinent perspectives. First one is on the territory. Our family moved to Eastmoreland in 1935, and I purchased my house in Eastmoreland Heights in 1955. Eastmoreland originally was platted and planned as a residential adjunct to the college. That was the idea. And plenty of both presidents, but a lot of faculty, I can probably rattle off at least a dozen faculty houses in the 40s in Eastmoreland, faculty there. Reed was the neighborhood meeting place, summer swimming pool, gym classes and programs, tennis courts, all added to the cultural and academic events. It would be great if I had a representative of the extensive Eastmoreland dog population here to talk to you today. Maybe a talking dog who could extol Reed's green grassy fields with its owners watching from Eastmoreland. I'm the product of great teachers at Dunaway in Eastmoreland and also exemplary professors at Reed, which is my second perspective. I've been active in the Alumni Association president. I was nominated to be on the Board of Trustees. I'll just go on to the still hanging around. I'll go to the third perspective, which is history and land use. I've done a lot, as you probably, many of you know, I've chaired the Neighborhood Woodstock Neighborhood Association and Southeast Uplift Coalition of Neighborhood Associations, served on the City Club 18-month research study on urban growth, appointed the Mayor's East Bank Freeway Committee, Mayor's Spirit of Portland Award. Anyway, I'm trying to establish a credibility for a balanced approach on this matter. And I've been in the house, Parker House, several times. I've had a close friend whose home was directly across south from, across Moreland Lane, someone who just testified in favor of the thing. I socialized with the family next door to the east, and as kids, we sometimes visited a playmate in the second house over. And I recall the Parker spread, before it was cut up into the little lots that you're hearing from now, when there used to be a tennis court alongside Martin Street and a swimming pool. I mean, it was a real estate before this Moreland Lane and the what's happened since then. And students have had digs in the house, too, over time. Finally, it's my belief that Parker House restored and maintained should be a great source of pride for all of us. We need to seek the most appropriate function for this, the far and away most stately structure in all of Eastmoreland. It isn't just a house. You know, if memory serves, the family, after Mary Parker, consisted of seven kids, to give you an idea of the size of this.
Mr. Linsky, you're going to have to wrap it up.
I'm almost down to the last line. Thank you. The two lines are a defined, written, monitored, known program of rights and responsibility is much more desirable than the prior neglect of this house and any possibility of unknown large family of folks of many uncontrolled vehicles, basketball hoops, music, sports, motorcycles, friends, activities, parties, and so on and so forth, 12-7, 24-7. I mean, you know, you could get something that we had no control over. So that the staff has negotiated what might hopefully be a win-win, or even for the public, a win-win-win, and I urge the support of the staff report.
Moshi.
A long line.
So, Moshi, I have a question for you.
Oh.
Do you have any thoughts on the student count at Reed College?
Thank you for the question.
Just came to him.
There's been, however, the numbers that have been mentioned here go, for traffic control or other reasons, including admin and other, is a different formula than the actual purpose of the college, which is to keep the level at a certain level, 1250, the student faculty ratio, we've been told is the same, and I've never heard anybody say that they're argue in favor of an increase of the student's body. It varies from time to time because you don't know exactly which students are away for a year and are coming back, which students are accepted and not accepted, and so forth. There is a variation, but the basic structures is not intended, in my view, to be increased. Right, another question that came up, I thought, was the...
Oh, yeah, I guess I asked a question.
We'll now have a rebuttal by the appellant. Please come forward.
Have to follow that?
Yeah.
Folks, I'm afraid so.
Folks that have only lived there since the 50s, the newcomers, yes. Squatters. Yes.
Sir, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. Not surprisingly, I have a couple of rebuttals to... Mr. Abel's testimony and a couple of the others as well. First, Mr. Abel gave you his interpretation of all of the conditions, and I'm sorry, when I count them, I still count over 40, each individual one. And if you've had a chance to read our written submittal, these conditions do nothing to protect the residents of Moreland Lane. If you can please tell me how getting mailed a calendar will ensure that the livability of Moreland Lane stays the same? Can you tell me how the wording on the invitation is going to protect my livability? I see a lot of these conditions, and they don't satisfy any codes. They don't solve any problems. All they do, really, is create something for us to pay attention to, something for us to keep track of, to make sure the college is doing what they're doing, creates a burden for the college. I'm sorry, I have a real problem with most of those conditions. Second, I want to go back to the enrollment issue for a minute. Our issue is not with the enrollment or the number of students. Our issue is with the fact that there is no cap in this master plan of the total campus population. In the 2006 master plan, the hearings officer installed a cap on the total campus population, which we feel is a very important and serves to protect our community from the campus growing quite large. In fact, we've made a suggestion in our written submission I don't recall exactly the number, but allowing for some expansion of staff and keeping the same 10-to-1 ratio, but we really believe that it is important to establish a total population on the Reed campus.
But you're not asking for that as part of this issue, are you?
Not as part of the Parker House issue, but as part of the appeal issue. Yes, we are. We feel that if you're going to go ahead and okay the master plan, there does need to be a total campus population cap in place.
Yeah.
The other issue Mr. Abel brought up was he wasn't sure that we could have a Parker House as a standalone conditional use. I can't find, when I wrote this, I looked very extensively, I cannot find anything in Title 33 that would prohibit the Parker House as a standalone conditional use. I find nothing in Title 33 that compels the college to put every single property they own inside their master plan, and in fact, historically, they have not. And so I cannot see any reason why this cannot be established as a standalone conditional use, and the restrictions on the Parker House be kept out of the master plan, and a review period annually, we would suggest, be initiated.
Are you responding?
I am. I'm both a member of the East Moreland Neighborhood Association Board and one of the appellants.
Okay.
You asked a question about Mr. Lilyorn, who's owned the house in poverty, I guess, for 40 years, but he lived there pretty nicely. The question was whether the whether anybody stated it was going to be the president's house. Mr. Abel seems to have either a short memory or no memory about Mr. Lilyorn's telling a group of people, including myself, and I would say this under oath, that it was going to be used for the president's house. So I'm that's fact number one. Fact number two is Reed offered to buy my house the following year. I have a written offer from Reed College. Why would they buy my house? I question whether that's going to be for the president or, you know, for what reason. The last point I want to make in terms of impact of livability, we've got one of the conditions, we've got Reed cutting out a U-shaped strip along the along Woodstock to allow access to the stairs. And then on top of that, we're going to put for disabled, potentially an escalator, a chair, something to make it ADA compliant. We're then going to put a person on Moreland Lane to direct traffic. So basically the other residences in Moreland Lane are going to have to basically coordinate their social functions around Reed social functions while there's a Reed traffic person out there directing traffic. I tell you, if you don't think that's impact to livability on Moreland Lane, what is?
So if I could clarify, you own the property that
immediately adjacent, east.
That is adjacent.
I'm 25 feet from their doorstep.
Okay, and on the same block, or it's across the street?
I'm right next door to them, literally next door to them.
So you're one of the, where the tennis court or the swimming pool was?
My house was actually built in 1927. I'm really unclear as to when the Parker House was built. I've heard a couple of dates, but on my deed, it says 1927. So my house was built very close to when the Parker House was built, but I am immediately east to them. If you look at the carve out of Moreland Lane, the U-shape goes around the Parker House and around my house, okay, and back out to Woodstock.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. This house was built a year after the Parker House. The Parker House.
Thanks.
Sorry to interrupt.
Anyway, you've had a chance to hear our arguments, and hopefully you've read our summary and read our written submissions. We believe that you can modify this plan to protect our neighborhood. That is what code is supposed to do. This plan, as it is currently written, does not do that. What it does do is place the burden of seeing that the college complies on the neighbors and gives us no avenues to ever change or modify any conditions once they are ingrained in the master plan. And in fairness, it places a lot of burden on the college to perform tasks that in no way mitigate any of the impact on the neighbors. That is why we have proposed our plan to cut the use, to establish a conditional use outside the master plan, and to institute an annual review. And let's not overlook that the annual review is a two-way street. If the use of the Parker House proves not to create significant impacts on the neighbors, then the college should be able to adjust some conditions to allow more use. Code is there to protect us from significant negative impacts. By just establishing this use of the Parker House as a standalone conditional use and requiring a Type 3 review annually, you could put in place the conditions that will protect the neighbors and do what code is supposed to do. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. Now, council discussion. I'd like to have staff come back up, including Bob Haley. I'd like to ask the staff, how does the city code define residents?
Residence would be a household living use.
It would be an occupied household.
Yes.
I believe there's also a limit of no more than 6 unrelated people living in the house, coming along those lines.
Could I get a clarification of where we are in the 120-day shot clock and under what circumstances that could be extended?
The applicant has extended the 120-day clock until next Wednesday.
Under what circumstance can that be further extended?
The applicant always has the right to extend the 120-day clock, and I'd have to check the record, but they've got plenty of additional days. The state law caps the extension to a total of 245 days, and I believe they have well over 100 days left in that bucket of extra days. I could give you the exact number if you would like, but there's plenty of opportunity here to extend the clock if the applicant agrees to that.
I'm sorry. I wanted to ask Bob.
Yes.
On page 40 of the hearing officer's report, it indicates that you testified at a public hearing on July 14th of this year that the Southeastmoreland Lane is not considered a safety problem, yet in the prior part of that paragraph, it states that the streets are so narrow that a vehicle parked on one side of the street makes it difficult for another vehicle to pass, and most residents do not park on the street. It also indicates that that it has limited parking space. It's challenging to protect pedestrians and especially children on bicycles and tricycles from vehicles. How did you come to your conclusion that there's no safety problem?
I think one is just based on traffic crash data that gets reported for that street, and we couldn't find any that rose to that level in the five-year crash history. Second is, while Moreland Lane is much narrower than many of the streets in Portland, it isn't unnecessarily narrow compared to many other streets that the city has that that people do continue to park on. It does not meet. If the Fire Bureau were to say it was to cruise down that street, they would probably come to the Office of Transportation and ask that in every section where it's not at least 26 feet from curb to curb, that we sign it for no parking. There are many streets in the Southwest that would meet that criteria. Our parking operations staff would talk with Fire Bureau, talk with the residents, because it does have the impact of removing all the on-street parking, which would also be available for residents and their guests. So we try and be a little sensitive, too, about measuring the scale of it. The plus side for Moreland is that it does have access from two different directions. It's not a long, dead-end, narrow street. Also, about half of the residents, or maybe fewer, have frontage on Woodstock. So from a fire response standpoint, there is two means of egress to the site, especially the ones on Eastmoreland. Responding to a problem that may come up at the Parker House because of the number of activities, it essentially has frontage on three streets, even though two of them are Moreland, it's on a corner. So we didn't see it as that big of an issue. If it becomes an issue to the residents, we could look into signing the street for no parking in every place that it's 20 feet or less in width from curb to curb. But again, that would have impacts also on the residents that are there.
Do you have any? I'm sorry. Did you say that you talked to fire or consult with them about the access to that tomorrow?
No, I haven't. I've just been around long enough reviewing subdivisions and new streets on and subdivisions that get created on existing streets that aren't quite that wide. So I'm fairly comfortable. I have a good working relationship with Don Krantz, who is the staff in the Fire Bureau who responds to land use reviews.
Do you have an impression of the efficacy, the quality, the effort, the goodwill of both parties to try to come up with something that they could both agree on? Has that effectively occurred? Are you aware of it?
I have been the Office of Transportation staff person assigned to review land use cases for Reed College since I started in PDOT probably about 7 years ago. So I've been involved in any conditional use upgrades or master plan reviews since then. I was involved in reviewing, I believe it was a few years ago, they came in with the Parker House as a sort of a standalone amendment to the conditional use master plan. And that was the one that it was referred to that was denied by hearings officer Frank. At that point, I think transportation has always been, with relation to Parker House and what Reed has proposed, with the appropriate conditions for managing parking and traffic, has always been, I wouldn't say we were supportive of it, but we were not objecting to it. It has never been, from a pure transportation standpoint, as far as the approval criteria go for adequacy of transportation facilities, an issue with PDOT for this application. We take a look at what eventually the college proposed and the conditions of approval that they submitted and whether or not they were reasonable and enforceable. One thing that was mentioned, I think, by Mr. Abel was, and maybe the neighborhood, was to place no parking for Reed College student signs in the right-of-way along Moreland Drive. That is something, obviously, the council could impose, but from a PDOT perspective,